Rhymes Against Humanity with Adam Brodsky. This, I believe, is Rhymes Against Humanity number 5, or number 5, if you're keeping score in Mexico. I am really thrilled and happy to have with me Dani Marie. This is going to be, I was telling her downstairs in the green room, such as it was, that this is sort of going to be interesting because this is really the first interview that I have done with someone who is not, like, actually a dear, dear old friend. I mean, she and I are friends, and like if somebody said, is Dani Marie your friend? I said, of course she's my friend. I mean, and not just my Facebook friend, she's my real friend. But the fact is, she's like, just like a snatch hair more than a Facebook friend. Like, you know, we've seen each other in rooms and clubs around town, but, you know, I've never really hung out or nothing. So this will be my first hangout with, and I was wondering that if this is going to be like when you have, like, if you're interviewing somebody, and you're talking to somebody for a while and interviewing, especially maybe about their songs, which I hope are dear and personal to you, like, it's an intimate thing, right? Yeah. So I'm wondering, like, if this is going to be, if it's going to be different talking to someone who I don't know, you know, for 20 years with lots of stories, in like the same way, if this is a poor analogy, the difference between, like, you know, making love to somebody, whether it's like your wife or a long-term fuck buddy, or just like some rando that you picked up at Connie's Rick Rack or whatever.
Oh, man.
So you will be my, one night stand sort of thing. So there's a lot of pressure on you, but don't worry. By the morning, you'll be gone, so it won't be too awkward.
Oh, man.
Anyway, but before I get to that, I want to say some things that now you have to sit through. And then we'll get to the part that's about you.
Okay.
I want to talk about, are you a baseball fan at all?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So the trade deadline came and went. The Phillies, of course, this year, not their finer season. I predicted them to have, at the end of the season, 75 or 76 wins, you know, 5 or 6 games under 500. It looks like they're going to be a little worse than that. And when the trade deadline comes at the end of July, you as a manager, as a general manager, you can do one of two things. You can buy, if you think you have a shot, you can buy players and, you know, try and trade away players for players that can play now and try and bolster your team and get better. Or you can sell players to other teams that are buying and you can restock your farm and, you know, it didn't work out this year, let's try it again another year. Ruben has decided to do neither of those things. He has neither bought nor sold, for which, of course, he's taken a beating on the WIP, on the sports talk, because it seems like their sort of thinking is, well, if you're not buying or you're not selling, you're doing a great job at looking interested, by the way. If you're not buying or you're not selling, you're like, this is good. What we have is good. And what we have is clearly not good. The Philadelphia Phillies, like, but even if he were to become a buyer, so your choices are buy or sell. If he were to become a buyer, not that there's a whole lot of great stuff even out there to buy, but what does he have to build around? Because with the exception of maybe of Kyle Kendrick, there is nobody having a good season. You know, nobody is shining. So you think, well, then he's a seller. Is he ready to blow up this team? And to me, the answer is yes. This team is old. This core team is not going to win another world championship. This team is not. And so the smart thing, the smart baseball move, it would seem, would be to sell everything, buy a whole bunch of dudes for the farm, and then in another 2 or 3 years make a run. But he hasn't done that. And people think it's because he's in denial, that he thinks the team is too good and they can still win this way. I don't necessarily think that's the case. I have another theory, and I'm glad you asked. Then we'll get to songwriting eventually. But the Phillies have a huge Comcast contract. And they show the games on the Comcast. You get the cable at home? You get the good cable with the...
I don't have cable.
Good for you. I wish I could break the cycle. But, and in order to get the Comcast Sportsnet, I tried to break the cycle. I tried to zone it on down, but they've got you by the baseballs. Mm-hmm. When I tried to knock it down to, like, you know, $30 or $40 a month or whatever, and then right at the very end of the conversation, I'm like, well, I get Comcast Sportsnet with that. And like, no, that's digital preferred. So I had to pop, if I wanted to watch the Phillies games, I had to pop all the way back up, and the Phillies home games, not just the away games that are televised, I had to pop way back up to, I don't know, $120 a month or whatever the hell the thing was. So they get you that way, and so Comcast is making their money that way. Every time a team has come up, these teams now, they renegotiate their contracts. The Mets, the Yankees, the Dodgers, the Angels, these are big market clubs, New York and L.A., and they renegotiate these contracts with their TV stations. They almost don't care whether you come to the game live or not. That's why the Phillies show all their home games on Comcast. What they want you to do is pay the money to Comcast and get that level of coverage. So every one of those teams that did it, the Yankees and Mets, have their own network. The Dodgers and Angels do not, but the Dodgers and Angels both signed $1 billion, with a B, contracts with their TV stations. Comcast, which means that the Dodgers and Angels became buyers. The Dodgers and Angels, because there's no salary cap in baseball, the Dodgers and Angels became these huge, had these huge piles of cash that they could throw at players. The Phillies are signed with Comcast, which owns NBC, literally the largest company in the world, right? Like, and so when this happens, when this contract is up in 2015 or 2016, I think it ends in 2016, but they have an option to renegotiate early in 15 or something like that. The Phillies are going to renegotiate with Comcast, and they are going to be, they're going to get $1 billion. Because if you look at their ratings, the Phillies are pulling like, back when they were winning, they were pulling like a 9.3 share, which is, I forget all the exact numbers, but they're pulling a much better share than even the Dodgers and the Angels, who were getting those style contracts. So, I'm glad you asked. If Rubin was to ditch, was to sell and get rid of Chase Utley and Cliff Lee and those guys, and stock them with young guys, they wouldn't win any more games. They would be pretty much just as the same as they are, 10, 12 games under 500. You know, they would still not be a good team, but they would not have the guys that we love. They would not have, you know, those guys. You know, like every girl. Do you have a favorite Philly?
I actually met Ryan Howard before.
Really? How'd you meet Ryan Howard?
I was out in Old City.
All right.
Back in another life, I guess you could say. And my friends were from Delaware County, and they kept on saying to me, this is before I lived in Philadelphia. It's before I knew anything about the Phillies. I grew up as a Yankees fan, actually.
Yikes. where did you grow up?
Point Pleasant, New Jersey.
Okay, so it's legitimate. You're not like a Yankees fan from Ohio or something. Okay. Yeah.
And I, you know, they went off to the bathroom. They said Ron Howard was there. That's what I heard. Because they had a little bit of an accent. And I was like, Ron Howard, what are you talking
Opie
about?
Opie Cunningham.
So I'm looking around the bar. I don't see Ron Howard there, but I see this tall guy standing with this goofy Hawaiian shirt and glasses and some ridiculous necklace. And I decided to be a wise ass, and I went up to him and I said, why are you wearing sunglasses in a bar?
Nice.
And I pulled his sunglasses off of him, and my friends came out of the bathroom as I was making fun of him, and they were like, what are you doing? That's Ryan Howard from the Phillies.
So, nice. What bar was it?
32 Degrees.
Nice.
I have this hilarious picture that was on my MySpace page just how long ago it was.
MySpace, nice.
And somebody actually stole it off of there and put it onto drunkathletes.com. So
very nice.
Still on there.
And that's as far as it went with him?
That's as far as it went.
What was his reaction to you pulling the glasses off?
He was pretty drunk, actually. I don't think he realized what was going on at all. And his girlfriend came out like right after, and we left right after that.
She has a nest egg to protect. Yeah, that's. I'm sure that, you know, those guys get thrown at all over the country.
Yeah.
And I doubt that they are always polite.
Yeah. And I was just trying to be a wise ass and make fun of.
That's awesome.
Classes,
I mean, that's a good move to pretend like you genuinely didn't know who he was. But I guess your play is to not know who he is.
Yeah.
Like that's the way to get the. So I was on some big rant about. Oh, right. So so because we all love the. So Ryan Howard is your favorite Philly?
I wouldn't say he was my favorite. I just know more about him. I paid attention to him.
Okay.
After that, I guess. You could
sure. Say. That's all it takes. When I was a kid, Ed Van Imp was a defenseman for the Flyers, and one time I had my dad got these really good seats, and as he got checked into the boards and skated away from the boards, he hocked a loogie back at the boards as he skated away, and it went through the boards, and just where the plexiglass met, a little piece of spittle came through and hit me on the cheek. And Ed Van Imp was my favorite Flyer because he spit on me. It was amazing. So anyway, if they're going to lose these games, anyway, they want to lose them with players that we love, because then we'll watch the TV, and as long as the ratings stay up, then in 2015 or 16, they will get their $1 billion contract, and the Phillies will be the goddamn Yankees, and they will buy whatever they frickin' need. And that is my philosophy on why Ruben Amaro is not actually ostrich head up his ass full of sand knucklehead and actually might know what he's doing. Because I always like to think these guys actually know more about their job than I do. Like if Ruben Amaro was a folk singer, or I would be like, you know, I think I know more about. But He's a general manager, so I'm going to give him... I mean, I did that with Andy Reid as long as I could, and then I was like, I don't think Andy Reid knows more about football than I do. But are you an Eagles fan as well, or...
No,
not at all. A Giants fan.
Yeah.
That is... So, but you're just a baby. Are you 30? You know, we don't have to talk about how old you are. I'm sorry. I mean, you got the face. I apologize for the woman. So... You look, if I had to guess, I would guess that you are in your mid-20s. So whatever the truth is, you're doing great. Unless you're 18, in which case you look awful.
No, I like to go to live baseball games. That's why I converted from the Yankees to the Phillies.
There you go.
And I grew up as a Giants fan too, but I stuck with the Giants.
Okay, so. That's fair enough. It's hard to be an Eagles fan. I wouldn't wish it on anybody. So, you are have you been to any, you ever go to minor league games?
No, I haven't.
Oh, I'm like the Saul of Tarsus of minor league games. I love to proselytize. Like, if you ever get the chance, go. I'm a Camden River Sharks season ticket holder, and they are awful, but that's not the point. Like, for a third of the cost of the Phillies game, you're sitting right on the dugout. You know, like I put my nachos on the dugout. The players recognize me. I recognize them. It's I love minor league baseball. I get 90% of what you get from the major leagues in terms of the quality, and the experience is so much more intimate. You know, it's the difference between going to see someone at a coffee house in a 75 seat room versus going to see someone at the Mann Music Center. You know,
yeah.
So that's my opinion. I'm gonna leave my I'm gonna skip over my Eagles bullshit, but I do want to say something about everyday heroes, about Bruce Haynes is the Register of Wills in Montgomery County, and it's an elected position, but it might be an appointed position. But anyway, Bruce Haynes decided a week or two ago that due to the Supreme Court striking down DOMA, he was going to start issuing marriage licenses to same-sex couples. And he just started doing it. He announced that he was going to do it, and he's been doing it, you know, slowly and surely over these past few weeks. And, of course, because we live in Pennsylvania, which I like to refer to as the Mississippi of the North, we are the only, as you know, the only Northeast state that doesn't recognize any sort of gay marriage, and in fact has a law condemning it. And we are also the only Northern state that had election officials, UN-affiliated election inspectors. They were all over Texas and North Carolina, you know, places where there have been traditionally problems, and Pennsylvania, because we're the Mississippi of the North, you know, and all that bullshit. So Bruce Haynes started issuing these things, and Dalen Leach, who is a state senator who's actually running for Alison Schwartz's seat in the fall in Congress. That's the Pennsylvania, I forget what district it is, but Alison Schwartz is going to run for governor, adios Tom Corbett, and Dalen Leach, who's a state senator, is going to run for her seat, and I kind of hope he wins because he's one of the good guys, along with introducing a gay marriage bill a few times where, you know, you go up to Harrisburg and introduce that and you just get laughed out of the chamber. He also introduced first he introduced a medical marijuana bill, and then he introduced a recreational marijuana bill, and of course both flamed out, no pun intended there. So Tom Corbett instructed the Pennsylvania Department of Health. I actually underlined some stuff here with my highlighter, but I don't know where it is. The Pennsylvania Department of Health to send a cease and desist letter. They issued a writ of mandamus. I don't know what mandamus is, but you can get issued a writ of it. Tuesday afternoon, directing Haynes and the Orphans Court to cease and desist the issuance of licenses, calling it, quote, indicating falsely that marriages between individuals of the same gender have been lawfully performed and a person authorized under law to perform the marriages. The clerk's actions are in direct defiance to the express policy of the Commonwealth, and that marriages shall be one man and one woman. Because the suit that they filed alleges that, I'm quoting, untold harm to the public could set a... But what's going to happen is, I think this is going to be the precedent case. Like... These are going to be marriages in Pennsylvania that are deemed unconstitutional, and they're going to go to the state Supreme Court, and the state Supreme Court may rule against them, and they're going to go to the U.S. Supreme Court, and this could be... The way this is going to get wiped out, from everything I've read, is that it's going to get wiped out slowly and slowly until there's just pockets, like eight or so states left. You look at how, if you use the basis of miscegenation laws, I think I said that right, which is the marriage between blacks and whites, which was illegal in a bunch of states, and then slowly and slowly it got whittled down until it was just like seven or eight states. Obviously, you can guess the ones, you know, Mississippi, Alabama, South Carolina, the fucking freak states. Abraham Lincoln, history's greatest monster. Let him go, I would have said. But anyway, and eventually the Supreme Court ruled, look, fuck it, it's legal everywhere, this is bullshit. And those few backward states are going to have to, eventually the Supreme Court will overturn it. But this could be a case that could go to the Supreme Court and chip away further at this. You know, these people have lost this battle, so I heard that they're digging in. Because they've lost it in so many places already, it allows them to concentrate their fight and come hard at places like Pennsylvania. So anyway, I wrote this one thing. It's a Facebook status I posted back in April. And then we're going to talk songwriting.
Okay. I did hear that Montgomery County legalized it, though. Is that untrue? Or
The guy just started issuing licenses.
Oh, that's what happened. Yeah. So this guy, he's from Montgomery.
Yeah, says, I interpreted the law to read that it's legal. And so he started issuing licenses. And Dalen Leach, he tweeted that he performed a ceremony. Apparently, somehow he's authorized. I don't know how he's an authorized Justice of the Minister, you know, there's a million ways you can get authorized. Is TJ authorized to perform weddings? There you go. So yeah, so you know, there's plenty of ways. So this guy actually authorized one, and he tweeted in his tweet was something like, "I just performed a gay marriage in my home, and my marriage it didn't harm my marriage at all. Amazing." So this is what I wrote. Here's the thing I want to say. Though the fight is not over, and there will still be a few battles lost and more than a few won, it's becoming clear that soon, love will conquer hate, and though it will eventually take SCOTUS to reluctantly wipe out the last few vestiges in the deep southern backward parts of the country, it's a matter of years and not a matter of generations before everyone is free to love and marry and then grow to quietly resent whomever they choose. There are myriad people who, in small and large ways, are responsible for this victory for love, but none so much as the millions of LMNOPQ folk who have bravely come out to their family and friends and proven that y'all are just as boring and dumpy as the rest of us, sitting in cubes next to you or in the bedroom down the hall. The bravery required to do such a thing is, to me, heroic. My hat is off to you, and I'm going to be so happy when your victory is complete and you and I can move on and help the next group of folks who have the audacity to believe that the 14th Amendment should apply to them too. Seriously, you guys are my role models. So I wanted to say that because this guy, Bruce Haynes, that started doing this just on his own, is kind of an American hero. Like that, it takes a lot of it takes a certain degree of balls to do a thing like that, and his bravery should be applauded, and that's all I wanted to say. If you have any shout outs to your gay and lesbian peeps, so anyway, that aside, I am now here with Dani Marie. I am happy to be here with her, and let us first say that you are playing the Philadelphia Folk Festival in a couple of weeks. That's a big fucking deal.
Yeah.
Now, you played before too, didn't you?
No, it's my first time.
Excellent. Punch it in, girlfriend. I remember when I first got my cherry broke up there, it's a big deal, man. It's a premier thing. It's a folk festival. And not only that, it's despite in addition to the huge exposure, it's just a really terrific honor, and I'm so, so very, very happy for you.
Thank you.
Now, you're also you're in a bunch of bands too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you're in, are you in, it's Fistful of Sugar, are you in that, or?
TJ and I have a new project, Reverend TJ McGlinchey and I, it's called Lovers League, Bowling League of Lovers, and that project will be released in October.
Okay.
At Connie's Rick Rack, actually.
Nice.
You mentioned it earlier. And I also have my solo project, and then I'm in another, I'm in a dream pop band called Lockets.
Okay. And so the project with you and TJ, are there others, or is it just the two of you?
TJ and I are playing together, and then Chris Miller, who plays drums with my solo project and also with Lockets, is in the project.
Nice.
And Christopher Davis Shannon plays stand-up bass, and then we have a couple other people that are coming in that TJ is bringing from his band.
Nice. So all three of your projects have the same drummer. Did I get that right?
Yes.
That is awesome. That's one set of drums. That's only one guy to fuck it up. Drummers. That's fantastic. Good choice there. Why don't you play us a song?
Okay.
Absolutely anything you want, since you were so polite listening to me ramble for 15 and a half minutes.
Oh, I enjoyed it. It's great. I'll play, the song's called Only, and I released it, I guess about 3 months ago or so.
Okay. How long ago did you write that?
I guess about a year ago.
Okay. So how long does it, now, are you releasing, how many records do you have? Do you have records out?
I have one official record. Okay. I just released two songs today.
Yeah, what were the names of those? I listened to them today.
Mirrors, okay. And Hurricane.
There we go, okay.
And I also have another single that's out. That was the first thing I released. It was called Vampire. Already is called Vampire.
Now, how old is Vampire?
Vampire's from 2010, and then I released, that same year, I released Impulsive, which was the first album, and then today, I released two more singles, and then, actually, for Lockets, we released an album in December of 2012, and then another one will be out this
month. This is very confusing.
Yeah, I know, there's a lot of stuff going on.
It's better than a little stuff, but I'm going to need a flow chart to figure it out. But so you, now, when you write a song, do you have any, how do you feel, you know, so you're writing a song, and it could go, it could be a solo project, it could be with the bowling deal, or it could be with, how do you figure out what goes where?
For the songs that I write for my solo project, they kind of fit in nicely with the things that Reverend T.J. McGlinchey and I are working on.
Mm-hmm.
And then for Lockets, that was a different project for me. Todd, who's the co-writer, he writes all of the music, presents it to me, and then I'll write the lyrics and the vocal melodies over it.
Oh, so in some songs, you're writing words and music.
Yes.
And in the Lockets project, you're just writing lyrics.
Lockets is lyrics and vocal melodies.
Okay, I'm getting...
Yeah, Lockets is lyrics and vocal melodies, and that's my more electronic project. I play a synth in that and do different
things. And so, is Vampire's Lockets?
Vampire is not Lockets. Vampire is myself.
Okay.
So Vampire and Impulsive are both of my solo projects.
Okay.
And then I released two songs today that's part of my solo project. And then... TJ and I are working on. It's basically a split album.
Right,
similar
okay.
to what the Spinning Leaves had right. done in the past. And we'll have three of my songs and three of his songs on the album.
Okay.
And then we sing on each other's songs.
Right. Now, do you... when you... Are these co-write songs at all? Or are they your songs and his songs?
My songs and his songs.
Okay.
For that, so. And we're just basically singing on each other's songs. And TJ sings with me and plays guitar with me when I play live.
Right.
On a solo project. So we've been used to singing on each other's
the one you
singing my song.
I'm trying to keep up. I should have written this down.
Sorry.
Only was released today, right? Is that one of the...
No, no. Only was released, I guess, about like 3 months ago.
Okay.
And that's...
And that's you and... Which is the one... I'm trying to think. The one I listened to that seemed like it had co-vocals. Was that you and TJ?
It was Grizz. Grizz on that.
Grizz, okay.
So that's what it was. So
okay.
Basically, I went on... I got laid off from a job in October, and I had a lot of free
that's a gift.
Time on my hand, yeah.
Yeah.
So I went on a recording spree.
Nice.
And now I released two songs that I did with Grizz singing on one of them, and Andy Keenan played pedal steel, and we had my drummer and Christopher Davis Shannon and everybody played on it. So it was a fun project, but it was just those were the two songs that I released.
Right.
For that.
Okay.
I know it's a lot.
No, it's great. I mean, the thing, I just feel like I'm the only guy that's not getting it because you're so focused on it. Does everyone else have the same problem?
Like, yeah, they're okay. Like, how many projects are you in?
So. That's great though. That's great that you're so busy and in demand. And also, you've been you host a bunch of open mics.
Yeah.
And you always have, right? I'm like, that's how we met. Is you were hosting, what was it, Lickety Split or?
Yeah, I've right. hosted pretty much the name venue in Philadelphia. Yeah. I probably hosted an open mic there.
I used to run that grind.
Yeah.
I wrote a lot of songs that while you were listening to, you know, like, the awesome part about an open mic is that anybody can just play, but the worst part about an open mic is that just anybody can just play.
Yeah, so. I enjoy it. I mean, it was where I grew as a musician.
Oh, how so?
Just going out to different open mics, and when I first started playing out in Philadelphia, I thought that I'd be booed off the stage, and I was scared to come to the city, and a friend of mine, I started to play a little bit. I would go to the Grape Street Mania, the
yeah.
larger space when they had it.
Right.
And then I would play at, like, I started making my way into media, playing at Jocelyn's, and I met some people that said, you know, you should try playing a couple open mics in Philly, and I was like, I can't go to this. Big scary city by myself.
It's funny because that's exactly the same. I mean, I guess we all did that as kids. Mm-hmm. We're like, oh my god, the city.
Yeah, and then I went and I couldn't believe how welcoming everybody was. And
we're nice people.
Yeah, so I just
I can't believe how welcome. I was just a cute girl with a guitar, and everybody was nice to me. What a shock!
but yeah, it's still where I try out new songs and see how people react to it, and then kind of develop the song.
So, I know you're hosting at Sisters, and mm-hmm. are you doing the Woolly Mammoth? Where are your open mics?
I host Wednesdays at Sisters, with the exception of second Wednesdays. I host at Connie's Rickrack. And then Tuesdays at Liberty's.
Okay.
And those are the open mics that I'm doing right
all
now.
All right, Tuesdays and Wednesdays.
Yeah.
That's a perfect way to make some extra cash on slow days. That's
yeah.
great. Yeah, I've hosted a few myself. I used to have, I think before, while you were just probably in junior high school or whatever, I would host the Anti-Hootenanny. It was at the Kyber.
Okay.
And then it was at Fergie's for a bunch of years. And we only did it once a month. But it was really nice to get it. We had a nice group of people that came out. And the concept was, you know, anti-folk. So it was people who didn't really fit into the regular open mics. And they could come and be weird. And it was pretty nice for a while. But, you know, you get burnt out at everything. So, but I remember meeting you at Licky Split. Steph dragged me down, and you were just very, very kind to me, and you handed me your business card with that that 60s retro. Yeah,
okay.
that's adorable. And you said call me for a gig, but I just wasn't playing shows then. I was like, I had just been off the road after playing, you know, too many. So, how many shows do you think you play a year?
Oh wow.
Count the open mics. That's a working night.
Counting the open mics?
Yeah, count them.
It's probably like, you have to help me out with math. Probably like three shows a week.
Okay, three times. That's 150 shows a year.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome, dude. That's legitimately rock and roll. And how much have you toured? Like, what's your longest stint away from home? How much underwear
I'm
did you have to pack?
I'm trying to do that more often. I just went on a mini tour in the beginning of July. And mm-hmm. I went through the Carolinas. I played a gig at this place called the Purple Fiddle.
I know the Purple Fiddle. I saw it on your website. The Purple Fiddle's a nice room, isn't it?
Yeah. Everybody was really nice, and they put you up there and everything. So
yeah, the Purple Fiddle is a very cool. I've had good times there, and so and it's West Virginia is a trip. Mm. West Virginia is the most stars and bars place you'll ever want to see, and everybody's all Confederate, and then you try and remind them, you know, the reason West Virginia exists is because in 1863 you didn't want to be part of the CSA anymore, and you seceded from Virginia. And you're like, nah, you got that wrong, son. They told me one of the first times I was in West Virginia, that was a very nice time, and they told me that wild ramps, I guess it would be the plural, are a thing that they eat, and they're like really strong scallions, and you pick them on the side of the road, and they taste garlicky, and then the next day when you sweat, you'll smell them on you, and I thought they were fucking with the Yankee. I thought they were like, they said, you know, pull over and pick them on the side of the road. I'm like, you want me to cook weeds? You're just fucking with them. And they said no, and this guy went home and came back with a baggie full of ramp and said, here, cook these tomorrow. And I did, and they were pungent, but delicious. So that's one of my West Virginia stories. So how far, you went down to South Carolina?
Down through to Charleston, South Carolina.
All right.
And then went to, went to North Carolina, the Sanford area.
Okay.
I played at an open mic there. A friend of mine just moved to that area. And then went to West Virginia, and then we were originally going to play a gig in Pittsburgh, but it kind of fell through, so we just hung out there.
There you go. Yeah, that's the way it goes.
It was a Taylor Swift show and a furry convention at the same time.
I remember reading that on the Facebook. That is awesome.
The city was
so crazy. You should have bought a little a suit, some footy pajamas, and a little kitten ears, and then just busked.
Yeah.
You could have made a fortune, or you know, found a husband.
Yeah,
I do sort of, I kind of empathize with the furries, because you know, whatever, that's their particular thing, mm-hmm. and it's so fucking laughable, like. People can understand a lot of fetishes, you know, but furry fetishes, even if you're trying to be, hey, everything's okay, you can't help but laugh because, dude, they're dressed up like rabbits. And so I sort of feel for them that they're, you know, seriously into dressing like kittens and rabbits and bears and mm-hmm. and trying to have sex and be... Oh, I mean, God bless them, but they have quite a furry cross to bear.
Yeah.
Why is Pittsburgh furry ground zero?
I don't know, but it's the largest convention, for furries, apparently, according to the website.
You are my furry go-to girl. Whenever anybody asks, excuse me, I'm gonna call Danny.
Well, we asked somebody that was dressed as, you know, a bunny rabbit or something like that, you know, we're like, why are you dressed like that? What's going on? Everybody's dressed as stuffed animals, and they said it was an Anthrocon fest. So we looked it up, and then, furries.
The family word for furries. That's amazing.
So... But as far as touring, I haven't done a whole lot. I've been playing in New York once a month for about 5 years, so that's kind of like...
Where do you play in New York?
Mostly the Lower East Side. I've been playing a little bit more in Brooklyn, playing at Pete's Candy Store.
Yeah, that's a good place.
So.
And have you played the Sidewalk Cafe, the Fort?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's my anti-folk home. Yeah, so that's... I mean, that was the first place I ever went to New York. I spoke about it on the podcast when Mia and I went up there, and Butch and I... And so, what was your? I mean, I haven't been to the Fort in a few years. What was your opinion of the Fort?
I thought it was pretty neat.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I used to play before the smoking ban. In New York, the smoking ban it was before Philadelphia's smoking ban, it was New York's smoking ban, mm-hmm. and it became this weird thing because New York, anyway, you know, like whether you're playing Arlene's or the Sidewalk or the Living Room, whatever, you know, there's 9 acts on a night, mm-hmm. and you're scheduled, you know, from 7 to 7:09 or whatever the hell your stupid time is. And between every soon as your set would be over, everyone would take off outside mm-hmm. and go smoke. And you just be like, the room, and so if you were up next, you're like, this room is fucking empty, and I have to go on at, you know, 6:59, 7 o'clock, strum. And so you're strumming to an empty room and just hoping they come back, and they finish their cigarettes, and they do come back, and then you finish, and then,
yeah,
so.
Everything's definitely right on time there. I used to host a, I had a monthly showcase upstairs at Pianos.
That place, I don't know.
Pianos is a really cool spot. It's on Ludlow Street in the Lower East.
Okay.
But I had, once a month, I had the upstairs room from 7 to 10, and I would just book Philly musicians and New York bands, and
cool.
Just have a whole showcase there once a month, so that was fun.
So how long have you been, like, ever since I've known you, which is probably, I don't know when that was, 2005 or 6 or 7, I honestly don't remember, you've been, along with playing, you've been hosting open mics and doing booking for places.
Mm-hmm.
So, what was the first, how'd you get into, like, not just strumming, but booking as well?
I just started sending emails out to places. My background has been in sales for a long time.
Okay.
So, I just started, networking, going to open mics, and then also sending emails out. And that's how I got the gig in New York. I reached out to a guy that was booking out at Pianos. He said, all right, hey, come in for one show, liked it, and then wanted to do it once a month. And then he moved to a couple different venues, so I, like, went with him.
Oh, wow.
To a couple different spots.
Oh, that's very cool. That's, so. I have self-esteem issues. So, like, selling is so hard.
Yeah.
You know, I'm happy to write a song, and I'm happy, you know, when people say they like it. I've worked really hard to try and be like, to say thank you, mm-hmm. rather than saying, oh, it's not that good, or all that bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so you just, yeah, you have good parents?
Yeah.
Well, good. I mean, like, as, you know, as someone who's, because when you're in sales, I mean, like to walk out there with your balls hanging out and be like, I'm awesome, and that's why you should buy whatever I'm selling, whether it's a song or...
Yeah, well, my dad's in sales. He also plays music, so kind of fell in his footsteps with that. But yeah, I just have the mindset that I never try to push anything on anybody. It's like, all right, here's what I have. If you want it, cool. If you don't, then that's fine. I'm not a pushy salesperson.
But that's not sales. Like, you are, like, the key is to actually push while appearing that you're not pushing.
I guess so, but I never push something I don't believe in, I guess.
There you go.
And, yeah, I'm definitely not. I mean, maybe it's why I'm not in sales right now, but.
Well, you're getting your real estate license, right?
Yeah.
That's super exciting.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, and I feel like, I don't know, I feel like people are sick of pushy salespeople too. And, like, for me, it's just like I present it how it is, and I'm real and honest about it. And if it doesn't work for somebody, then it's like, all right, well then.
Do you feel when you're on stage, do you draw on those skills? Like you know, because especially like in an open mic, I have 3 songs to get these idiots to stop trying to sleep with each other for 5 minutes and listen to my songs. Like, do you feel like you're selling a song? I mean, do you understand?
I really don't. I play how I feel.
Okay.
You know, in between, and I've been a bartender too, like, I will, like, encourage people to tip the bartender and drink,
oh,
and,
yeah.
You know, maybe buy me a shot or something like that.
You say that from the stage?
I guess that's the salesy part out there, but yeah, no, I just, when I play how I feel about stuff and just kind of go with it.
Now, do you get, like, I was listening to a bunch of your songs that were online today, and they seem to fall roughly into 2 camps. You know, I don't mean to completely oversimplify you, because that's annoying as all fuck. But here we go. You got, there seem to be songs that were on the country tip.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say all the way the countrified. And then there were sort of dark and smoky juke joint songs that had a Billie Holiday. Zoned out kind of a feel, and I'm sure that you're way more complex than those 2 specific genres. But when you get into when you play either of those songs, are you Do you feel like you're acting and putting yourself in a headspace to actually perform the song?
I don't really feel like I'm acting, I guess. I don't know. I guess my three like biggest influences are kind of like where my music has gone in the three projects I'm in, I guess you could say.
And
like,
what are
you... Patsy Cline.
Okay.
Like, is the one that's like the country type of flavor for it. Billie Holiday. I love Billie Holiday. So.
Yeah.
And I'm actually working on a project in New York with a label called Someplace Called Brooklyn.
Okay.
And working on like creating that kind of raw sound, and that's where Only came from. The recording that you heard online, that's from Someplace Called Brooklyn.
Oh, okay. So that's yet another project that you left out of the matrix.
I mentioned it earlier, but then I was like, oh man, you look like you're getting overwhelmed over there. So.
As long as there's not going to be a test.
And then Radiohead, I like absolutely love. So I think with the Lockett project, that's more electronic, and even though it's more in the dream pop '80s type of feel, that's kind of where you know I could kind of try out some different.
What was your first concert?
First concert I ever went to was Jewel.
That's okay.
I fell asleep actually.
Okay, how old were you?
I was I think I was in high school.
Okay. Session. All right, wait, that's better than me. My first concert was Phil Collins.
Phil Collins is cool.
Phil Collins is cool. You act like you might meet him someday. Phil Collins is cool.
I would have rather have had Phil Collins as my first concert. Jewel was great. Like, she's definitely a great singer-songwriter and like performer. Just, I don't know, she started off yodeling a lot. And, like, it kind of was like, wait, what? It threw me off, so...
The reason I like Jewel was, first of all, I thought she was very hot, and that I love that little snaggle tooth.
Yeah.
So like my dad's a dentist, that would be my line. I'd be like, dude, I can get that fixed for you.
I think she did get them fixed.
Probably, but back in the day, and I liked her because in a time I forget, you know, when was her record? When, like I don't know, the late mid to late '90s or whatever. It was not a very folk singery time. And she was somewhat close to a real folk singer, actually selling lots of records. And so as a folk singer, that made me feel warm.
Yeah.
And she had a nice rack. So, and I liked her voice, and I actually thought the songs were... And what was interesting was that it was so clearly her first record. Like, these were her first few songs. She was a little kid. Mm. And I could hear... I remember thinking I could hear the immature songwriter. Because I look back on my first 10 or 15 songs, and they were fine, but you know they're immature. They were, and I could see hers. Like the only difference is hers were on a record, and mine weren't. And how about you? When did you start writing songs?
I guess around 2005, I started writing songs. Okay. I've played music my whole life, but I just never really wrote music until I started playing guitar.
You told me downstairs you were classically trained.
Mm-hmm. I was classically trained, and I was in choir and band. Every musical thing that you could be in high school, I was. And so, drum major, band geek. And
drum major? Well, wait, in the band, why? If you're classically trained, why were you a drum major and not playing some sort of instrument?
Well, I was playing clarinet, and then I eventually like tried out to be drum major and conduct the band. So
okay. Okay, so the drum major is like the that's a you're the Willie Nelson, you're the band leader.
Yeah.
Oh, very cool. Okay. So other than piano, guitar, what else do you and clarinet? What else do you play?
I'm trying to think of else. No, because piano, guitar, and clarinet.
Okay.
That's pretty much it.
Have you played clarinet on in any of these very projects?
No.
Dude. Because first of all, if I ever need a clarinet, there was a time 5 years ago I needed a clarinet player for this. Dixielandy song that I wrote, and I didn't know you played clarinet, or you would have received a pleading phone call. Been like, you need to find a clarinet, you need to bring it to my house. It was clarinet and tuba, but you have to. When was the last time you played the clarinet?
I'm a little rusty. I actually played with the Discount Heroes once, and I think the YouTube video is still online. But
all right, everyone, Google that.
Playing clarinet buzzed when you haven't played it for a long time on top of playing a midnight set at the fire. It doesn't work out well.
So. That is totally metal.
Yeah, the footage of that, I was like, oh man.
That is amazing.
My brother was in the band too, and I just like, I could feel his eyes burning on me the whole time he was playing bass. Like, what are you doing up here? You're embarrassing me, sister. Get off the stage.
What is the oldest song? Do you remember the first song you wrote? And can you play it?
No, I can't play it. I do remember it.
What was it called?
I think it was called Your Loss.
Okay.
I was going through a very Alanis Morissette phase. Actually, I started writing music my sophomore year of college.
Okay.
I was living in a house full of females that I didn't get along with. And across the street, there was the soccer team lived across the street, the guy's soccer team.
I love this sitcom.
So I would just go over there all the time because I didn't want to deal with them.
Right.
And they were all, you know, musicians and whatnot and listening to Floyd all day and whatnot. And, you know, they started teaching me a few chords. And I was so mad at the time because my dad played guitar. And I never really picked up the guitar because I thought, it's too hard. I can't do it. Blah, blah, blah. And I sat in front of the radio and I started playing along to it. And Sublime What I Got came on. And it was two chords. And I said, really? This song that I've been listening to this whole time is two chords? I could have been learning guitar years ago. Like, what is going on? So I started to write some music then, and then I kind of stopped until I graduated college, and then I started to play out.
What was your major?
I was a voice major.
Oh, okay. Where'd you go?
Westchester.
Okay. Nice. They have a good music department there?
Yeah. Yeah, I started out music education and then switched gears to music and communication.
Okay. Do you teach at all?
I've taught a few private lessons in the past, but I haven't recently.
So. Okay. So, do you think you could teach, like, you could teach voice, right?
Yeah.
Could you teach guitar and clarinet?
Probably wouldn't be as comfortable teaching them. I don't really consider myself a guitar player. I use it as a tool to write music, so.
Punch it in, sister.
I'm not like Eric Clapton up here. Like,
yeah.
Where my dad does all that kind of stuff, so.
And was he in bands? What's his deal?
Yeah, he was in bands, like, when he was younger, and he plays mostly for fun now.
Is he in a dad rock band?
No, not a dad rock band. He should be. I keep telling him he should, but...
Yeah, you and, you should get your dad in a band. Has your dad ever joined you on stage?
Yes, he did. He played with me at Royal Cafe, and he played guitar on Impulsive.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, on the album. My brother played bass on that album, too.
I can only imagine, like, as... I'm not a father or anything, but I can only imagine, like... In terms of crowning achievements, like the warm feeling of this is my daughter, the most important girl in my life, and I'm playing on a stage with her. Like, I get kind of warm thinking about it. Like, it's one of the few things that makes me want to have a child. So, but I can't be sure I'd get a lesbian, so I'm not gonna try. So, give us a couple of couplets, and then we'll let you play another song. But give us a couple of, if you don't know the first song you wrote, give me a couple of lines from it.
Oh, no. It was really bad.
Of course it's bad. Everyone's first stuff is bad.
I don't... Wait.
Oh. Just to warm you up, my first song...
Like,
go on.
The chorus is like, don't say another word because I don't want to hear it. Everything you told me relies covered in bullshit, which is like... Yeah, not
barely rhymes. It's lies covered in bullshit. We've come a long way because I really like that. What was the line I really liked? The girl will bite the apple of your eye. How's that go?
Bite the apple of your eye.
Yeah.
Poisoned by your words thrown in the sky.
See, you've come a long way. That's a really nice image. That's very nice. So now play us something. Do you have a song? You have a story song?
A song. What do you mean by story?
That tells a story about something happens to somebody and.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Give us a story song. All
right.
Yeah. What's this called?
Cowboy.
It'll
be the first song released for Lover's League.
That's you and TJ.
Yeah. The cowboy inside my head telling me to move along. Cowboy inside my head telling me to move. Sheriff's telling me no. Deputy
Nice. Nice. The sky opened up its lungs and pushed me to the ground.
And smashed me.
Smashed me to the ground. That's a nice line. That's a really nice line. So when you, let's talk about process. Is there a particular way, I mean, I know that it's not always the same, but in general, is there a way a song comes to you? You're driving in the car and something clever or?
Yeah, a lot of times driving in the car, I'll just hear a phrase somewhere and it'll stick out to me and then I'll just kind of write around that.
Do you pull the car over?
I have before, yeah. And now I have one of those voice recorders on my phone.
Yeah.
So I do that a lot.
Okay.
If I have a thought, I'll just record while I'm driving, which is probably not the safest thing, but...
No, Bart, man, you can't let it go.
And then I used to, when I first started playing, I had a 9-to-5 job, and I would park my car. I worked actually in Delaware County at the time, and I was right by the Rose Tree Park.
I don't know where that is, but okay.
I'm familiar with it. It's in Newtown Square. It's right by Burlap and Bean.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So, like, there's a park down the street. So I used to go... drive the park. I had this mini guitar I had in the back of my car.
What kind?
It was just one of those Carlos.
The ones from Guitar Center?
Carlo Rubelli?
I think that's Guitar Center's brand or something. Or?
Yeah, it was just a tiny.
Sam Ash's brand, maybe.
I had to buy a small guitar to get on a plane before, so I was like, oh, you know, and I just left it in my car. And I would sit in my car and play music and write songs on my lunch break.
Nice.
And sometimes in the winter, I would forget to have my car all the way on when I had the heat on, and my car died. It happened to me twice. I had to have somebody from work come and jump my car so I could go back to work.
I used to have a job a million years ago driving a donut truck.
Really?
And so I would have to wake up. And it's funny, too. For a while, I had nothing to do in my life except go to the open mic at John and Peter's on Monday nights and then drive the donut truck Tuesday morning. So my life was this giant blank, except for late Monday, and then I get home at 2 o'clock and have to wake up at 4:30 to go drive the freaking donut truck. And I almost didn't quit that job because I wrote so many songs on donut paper, on wax paper in that truck. Because you'd drive and there was no radio, and so you just sort of sing to yourself, and you'd be like, there's another one.
Ideas.
Yeah. So do you write more... How often do you think, how many songs a year do you write, you think?
I mean, I probably come up with some kind of song idea, like, once a week, so.
All right.
It's about, like, 50, but, like, you know, most of them are just kind of...
Right.
Pick apart to make them into other songs.
Right, okay.
Different things, so.
Okay. So you have a, you're pretty organized with your notebooks? You have a big stack?
They're kind of all over the place. I do... have a couple of books that I've typed out the lyrics for, and I'll have it all nice and neat. But then, you know, I'll have a gig and I'll hand it out to somebody and it's all messed up. So those are I'm usually pretty organized, but when it comes to my lyrics, they're all kind of all over the place. And if you see my lyric book, actually, you wouldn't be able to, my initial lyric book, you wouldn't be able to read it because my handwriting's horrendous. I could barely read it.
Now, let me ask you, is your songwriting handwriting more horrendous than your... write a note. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you're writing in shorthand over the guitar.
Yeah, I'm just writing as fast as I can, and so the idea doesn't float out.
You ever come back to a song 3 months later and be like, what the fuck?
Yeah, it's like, wait, what? What is this?
Can you usually decipher it?
Sometimes, yeah. But yeah, no, I usually can. And now when I'll write, my process is, you know, I'll hear a phrase, I'll go home, or I'll write down some of the lyrics or record part of it on the voice recorder.
Right.
And then I'll practice it out, and then once I have that idea, I record it right away.
Okay.
Because I've had experiences where I'll have a good idea that I think for a song, and then I won't record the whole song, and then I'll come back and be like, what did I do? So I'll do that, or I'll, on the Mac, I'll use that video thing on there.
Oh, okay.
And just crank it out like that.
Right. Now, so you're classically trained. Do you write on staff?
I don't write on staff when I write for guitar. I learned how to play guitar through websites like ultimateguitartab.com and things like that. I just taught myself.
Do you play any chords wrong? Because I play A minors and E minors wrong because I taught myself. No, you play them right.
All right.
Yeah, I reverse those two fingers.
Oh, do you? Okay.
Yeah, it's not good. It's not good. So when I give lessons, I can give about 12 lessons before the learner now knows as much as I do. I'm like, well, now go somewhere else. But when I give lessons, I have to teach them the right fingering because it's gonna mess them up when they try to play an E7.
Yeah.
From an E that I've learned to play wrong. So you write now. You're living in the. Are you still living in Northern Liberties with the band?
No, I actually live in South Philly.
Oh, okay.
So I live in Queen Village.
Nice. Congratulations, you've moved up.
Actually, I've moved down. I live in a basement.
Okay. Like Laverne and Shirley.
Yeah.
Have a little window that you look out, see people walk by?
Two tiny little windows, yeah.
Aww.
It's an interesting story how I got there, but...
Well, tell it.
All right. So I was living on McKean Street, 13th and McKean, South Philly, and I had to break out of my lease early. And the day actually before I signed the lease in that space, my landlord, his name is Nick, we went to go sign a lease, and he passed away.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
Yeah, and he was...
Wait, before you signed the lease?
Before I signed the lease. So, and he was separated from his wife, and we were working with his wife for that particular location. We were running out then at this point, 13th and McKean. I broke out of the lease early, and my landlord, she's a great lady, and she's like, you know, we have our family house still on the market. Why don't you live there until it sells for cheap rent? And I was like, all right. So I went to go look at this place. It's in Packer Park, right by where the Eagles practice.
All
right. Right across from Citizens Bank Park. Four floors, four bedrooms, like three baths, upstairs deck, huge backyard. And I had this whole plan because the second floor was perfect for house concerts. You had this whole huge area where people can sit. And then it was raised up for the dining room, and that could be like the stage. And then you have the kitchen, and then the outside deck. It's perfect.
Yeah.
And then there's another floor upstairs that like nobody even had.
Oh, the story's gonna break my heart.
It's great.
Yeah.
So I'm like, you know, it's been on the market for a year, whatever. I move in. The house sells in 2 weeks. I thought I'd have at least a month there.
Yeah.
This is my whole summer. My whole summer was planned to be this place, like go to the Phillies games and just hang out.
Yo, you know, see if Ryan Howard remembers you.
Yeah. So then I was in a situation where I had to move pretty quickly, and she had two properties available. One was out of my budget, and the other was her deceased husband's man cave that he basically built in the basement. So, and it's perfect location. Like, I'm right in Queen Village. It's great.
Yeah.
And I walked in, like, a lot of his stuff was still there, and he was actually a musician, too. So, it's interesting because she's... On the wall, there was a 12-string guitar, a TV, a deer head, and then a deer hooves. And he built a bar in the back of the space. And there's also, it had a fully equipped liquor cabinet, too. The liquor cabinet was fully stocked, I should say.
Nice!
So I had a fully stocked liquor cabinet, and I moved in. 12-string guitar, a TV, and a deer head on the wall, which I left. So, and I have a bar, so I can bartend right there. So
that's amazing! That's, yeah, other than the fact that you don't get much light.
Yeah, and the water comes in there because it rains so much. But other than that, it's fine.
That's, I want to come over to your house now and see this because that sounds, like, I just love the idea of a tiny little girl living in a man cave.
Well, actually, I'm going to have a cave concert soon.
Oh, perfect.
You should play a cave concert.
I will play a cave concert. I would love to do that. And it comes with a fully stocked bar. That's amazing. You call the landlord, like, yeah, we're getting low on scotch. I need you to replace the scotch.
Yeah.
So, when are you playing at the Folk Fest? You know your stage and everything yet?
August 16th, I'm playing the lobby stage, which I believe is a new stage that they have.
Okay.
And I'm playing around 2 o'clock. I'm also playing a workshop that they're having where they're going to have female musicians play different tunes together, and it's kind of like this.
Is it called Girl on Girl? It should be called Girl on Girl. I doubt Jesse would call it Girl on Girl. I'm going to talk to Jesse.
I'll have to find out the name that came up for it. It's in my phone somewhere. I'm having a brain bubble.
So you girls are going to play each other's songs or like Katie Curtis songs?
We're going to cover a song or do one of our own and then do one together.
Oh, that's great.
So
that's great. Do you remember anybody else that's on the bill with you? You don't have to, but let me put you on the spot. It's okay.
I'm blanking on it, but it's all the theme of it is murder ballads.
Oh, awesome.
So we have to pick a murder ballad to cover, and then I'm probably going to play that last song that I played in the cowboy song.
Nice. Do you have a murder ballad picked out yet?
To cover? No, I don't actually.
Okay.
I was thinking about the December song, the Shawshank or
I mean, you know, I personally would lean more old school.
Old school, you want
Homie Wise or Banks of the Ohio, I think, is a great one. I mean, there's plenty of great ones. The Willow Tree.
Okay.
All those girls that, you know, they get, you know, it was Appalachian contraception. If a dude knocked a girl up since 150 years before Roe versus Wade, he would ask her, you know, and the husband, and the father's pressuring him, says, you got to marry my daughter. He would take her out to the river, and instead of asking her to marry her, he'd push her in. And the girl dies, and his problem is pretty much over. It's kind of awful.
Yeah.
But, yeah,
I'll check that out.
Yeah, so there's plenty of terrific ones. My favorite version of Banks of the Ohio is Joan Baez does a version on an old LP. And that's where I first learned it when I was a kid. My parents' record collection was mostly crap stuff that I didn't enjoy. But there were a few peaches in there. And this one Joan Baez record was one of them. That's where I learned Banks of the Ohio.
Okay.
So yeah, but that sounds like a really terrific work. So you're doing that workshop, and then you have your own set, mm-hmm. and then are you playing with the Reverend?
I'm not playing with the Reverend.
Okay.
I'll be checking out his set. He's playing the day after.
Okay.
It's funny because I'm playing Music Fest August 10th, and then he's playing the 11th, and then
you keep missing each other.
Just like, dude. So.
When you go out on the road, did you go out solo, or have you gone out, or you go out with people?
I went out with another artist. His name's T.C. Cole.
I don't know him.
He's played some of the Bob Dylan tributes. So
yeah.
You probably know him.
I'm sure I would recognize his face.
So that was
the
one the tour I just did.
Okay.
And then the other experiences I've had so far of just touring have just been maybe going to New York, basically. And if some of my band members can come, then cool.
Right.
We played a festival a couple of summers ago in Long Island.
What festival?
The Escape to New York Festival was a one-time thing. They didn't have enough, I guess, to make it continue on. But it was cool. Patti Smith played it.
Oh, sweet.
Mates of State were on it. And what's the other guy? The other band I'm blanking out on, he just played at the XPN Fest, actually. Can't think of it.
That was away all weekend.
Yeah.
So you have... I'm trying to remember. There's a record coming out in the fall, and that's the bowling thing. What's it called?
Lovers League.
Lovers League, and that's three of yours and three of TJ's.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then the Lockets released, the two that you released today were Lockets songs?
No, the two I released today were my songs.
Were your songs, excellent.
And there were two songs that I had recorded in the beginning of the year, and I've just been sitting on them.
Where do you usually record?
Well, for Lockets, I record at Retro City Studios.
Okay.
And for my two songs that I just put out, I recorded with Bram Genzlinger. And he just basically had a home studio
that
he brought around.
Nice.
So experimented with that.
Cool.
And then TJ and I are recording at his brother's studio. And then I'm recording in New York with someplace called Brooklyn, too.
And so tell me again, tell me about the project in New York.
The idea is that we want to press everything on vinyl and have it with that Billie Holiday type of sound.
Okay.
For the first album. And then have a remix of everything that we recorded. So there'll be two albums for it. One will just be very raw, just kind of similar to Only, but a little bit more instrumentation put into it.
Okay.
And then we'll have a remix of it. Because the guy I work with there, he is from India, actually, and he works with a lot of different types of beats and does a lot of emceeing and sings in Bengali and things like that. And we're working with some people that he works with in New York from all different cultures that are going to bring in that part of the remix part of it.
Okay. So let's get back to songwriting. Is there a song that you've written? Like, I know you end up writing in a few different styles. I mean, you're in a bunch of different projects, and you're a multifaceted human being. And you end up writing in a bunch of different styles. Have you ever written in a style that is so completely unlike you? I have typical Adam Brodsky songs, and then I have songs that are not, that if I sing them, sometimes people ask if it's a cover.
Mm-hmm.
Can you think of one of yours that is not very much like a Danny Marie song at all?
I mean, I guess the Lockett's project was pretty much like that, because I had to really step outside of what I was doing. The vocal inflections that I have with my own songwriting that are kind of, at times, more country-ish.
Right.
Don't really work with dream pop, so I had to really focus on different ways of singing for that.
Okay, as a guy who can only sing one way if I'm lucky, can you demonstrate that? Can you explain that? I mean...
Like, I'm trying to think here. Like if I did... I could have been an American wife, but life I could have lived. It's like, you know, I could put like a little bit of rust on my voice and things like that.
Okay.
But then for Lockett's, like, star shining in daylight, sand pressed against my skin. It's raining inside this place, and you're not gonna change it, so I'll just rearrange it. So just kind of like a little cleaner, I guess you can say.
Okay.
I don't know if you heard, the thing is with when I'm singing in the dream pop project, there's also a lot of reverb on my vocals and things like that. So, but I guess I developed a little bit of a twang with the way that I pronounce things and sing things with my own stuff. And when I was working with Todd with it, he like really was like, you know, trying to get me to concentrate on eliminating some of that for that particular project.
So to do that, is it purely a clinical process? Okay, I shall twang less, or do you have to put yourself in a different headspace and think differently as? And take on almost a different persona?
Yeah, I definitely have taken on a different persona when I've been working with Lockett. And I'm still growing with the project. I mean, when I started playing with Lockett, my guitar was taken away from me. And I was like, wait, I have to stand on stage with nothing blocking me?
Isn't that horrifying?
You know? And then, you know, that's one of my biggest challenges with the band is I'm standing up there now and I don't know what to do. And I was supposed to be this front woman. And, you know, when I'm up playing my own stuff and I'm playing with TJ, we goof off and I tell, like, really corny jokes or whatever. I'm just like, hey, what's up? I'm Danny Marie. And then when I'm performing with the Lockett's project, I can still, you know, throw in some corny jokes here and there, but it doesn't translate as well for the project because it's more...
Serious business.
Like, it's like 80s, like, dream pop. Like, we all wear black and, like, it's like, you know... kind of sway back and forth and do different things, but I like just even the placement of where to hold the microphone, like it's been something I've been, you know, trying to work with, like,
you're holding a mic.
Do I hold the microphone outside of the microphone stand? Do I leave it on the stand? Do I, like, you know, do a
so
Aerosmith type of thing or what?
Do I do an Aerosmith type of thing?
So it's just more I feel naked when I'm playing with Lockett's because I don't have my guitar. And when you're playing and you have a guitar in front of you, you really don't have to move around that much.
Have you ever played the song shuffle, the XFS song shuffle?
I have not.
You should play it this year. Stephen Marmel organizes the whole thing. It's a really cool idea. You know, it's a Philly song shuffle. So everybody comes on and they play their one song, and then it's just like your iPod was on shuffle only with live acts. And
okay.
To watch, basically, to be backstage and watch him stage manage that clusterfuck is fucking amazing. Like, the guy should, like, that's the show. But anyway, one time I went to play it, and I was going to play this acapella number. And so one of the reasons I chose it was because it's short, it was 2 minutes, I'd do that. And then I wouldn't have to bring my guitar. Like, it was really simple. And all of a sudden, you know, and this was downstairs at World Cafe Live, I'm like, that's a 400-seat room, and I'm about to walk out there with no guitar. And it became horrifying.
Yeah.
And I looked at, I honestly forget who it was, and I said, dude, can I borrow your guitar? I'm not actually going to play it, but I need to carry it out there.
Yeah.
And he was like, wait, what? And I said, gimme. And I went out there and didn't play it. But I didn't even think about how horrifying it was until I was a minute from walking out on stage. When I see stand-up comics, too, I'm like, you know, if shit goes in the toilet... What do you do? Like, when I do that, if I'm telling some story and it crosses the line and I'm talking about, for some reason, something that I shouldn't be talking about, and you find yourself rambling on a thing and all of a sudden you're in some story about 11-year-old Girl Scouts, then you're just like, how did we get to this bizarre point? I'm just like, you know what? I can just, and now a song, and I can take 5 minutes and basically reset. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so I understand, like, being, I've never, I mean, the few times that I've played with a full band on stage, and it's really just a handful of times, I always had the guitar. I never considered, not, and basically I had the guitar so that the rest of the band could follow me, because I'm pretty arrhythmic, like, mm-hmm. you know, I it's its own, like, I've always said that people that playing music with me is like swinging two bats in the on deck circle. When you get back with real musicians, it seems so much easier for musicians to just follow the beat. Mm-hmm. But so I understand you're fretting, but I suppose you'll get better at standing up there.
Yeah, I mean, I get the more I get comfortable in my own skin with it, and you know, I try to at open mics a lot. I'll hop up on the mic when somebody else is playing, you know, a cover or something
nice.
Like that, if they let me. Like, TJ and I do that a lot, too. So, and that's, when I met TJ, I started doing that a lot more, where I was just singing a lot of harmonies. I grew up as an alto, so I love singing harmonies. So I just, you know, would hop up on the mic and do that. But when I'm singing with Blockets, I mean, I still, Barry, who's in the band, he also sings harmonies in the band with me, but it's still, you know, I'm kind of, like, supposed to be doing some stuff up there. I'm kind of awkward about it. So my dance moves are pretty much like Elaine from Seinfeld. So
it's funny because, like, you know, most girls can just sort of dance, like, it's a thing that the, but every once in a while you meet a girl that can't dance, and almost every time I've met one, she's a musician. And I think that's not a coincidence that she's like, look, here's how I can, because I know that I hated to dance, but I know that I can contribute to that scene by, look, if I'm up here with the guitar, I don't have to dance. I've somehow found a loophole.
Yeah, I'm definitely really shy with it. And I've tried to do the girl thing and wear heels for a lot of the shows that we've had for Lockets. And we discovered in the last show, I just like, you know what, I'm just going to wear flats and, like, see what happens. And I did move around a little bit more because I can't walk in heels. It's a moral of the story, but...
You can't walk in heels?
I can't walk in heels at all.
Miss Congeniality, like Sandra Bullock? Like
falling over.
Or White Chicks?
I have a ton of heels. I call it my museum of shoes because I don't wear any of them.
Why not? Like, what's your problem?
I'm clumsy and being on two tiny little poles doesn't help. So.
Well, you're a tiny little thing. So, like, I'm going to guess you're 5'3"?
Yep.
Okay. Boom. Excellent. I know your weight too, but I won't say it. All right, so we're gonna do this thing. I want, since you mentioned some things, I'm gonna stop this quickly. All right, we are back. The time that has elapsed is like 2 minutes. I taught her very quickly my little song, and we are gonna give it a shot. I'm gonna play because she mentioned you mentioned. I'm talking like you're not here. You mentioned that you're a big Patsy Cline fan, as am I. I wrote a song about how much I like Patsy Cline. It's also about how when you're the breaker-upper, you don't get to cry. You know, you're still sad, but everybody's like, why are you sad? It's like, well, I broke up with the girl. And they're like, well, fuck you. You broke up. You know, so you don't get to cry. So the only place you can really cry, especially being the breaker-upper and being a dude, the only place you can really cry is in your car. So this here is a song I wrote called Patsy Cline. It's a real old song, and lots of people know it. But I'd like you to, I'd be honored if you would join me on it because your voice is so pretty.
Aw, thanks.
Well, I still think of it as a crime scene. Oh, nobody's outlined. Black chalk. I said, if you have some time soon, we ought to sit down and talk. Well, I said, we should see other people, then left you to cry in the bar. Patsy Cline falls to pieces on the radio. I fall to pieces. Children can still be so cruel, and I'm not particularly proud of the things I didn't back up at school. Well, I don't think about it too often, but there's one thing that still brings a scar. If Patsy Cline falls to pieces on the radio, I fall to pieces in my car. But I watched your career from the papers. Your novel's a smashing success. I was always in awe of your talent. Some things I don't think you'd have guessed. Now you smoke pot with Hunter S. Thompson and eat Norman Mailer's caviar. Very old song. And Patsy Cline falls to pieces on the radio. I fall to pieces in my car. Well, I can't say I've not had good fortune. I play my guitar on a stage. I eke out an adequate living. And I sleep with girls half my own age. In a morning that kissed on a forehead. And it's me, the road and my guitar. But if Patsy Cline falls to pieces on the radio, I fall to pieces in my car. If Patsy Cline falls to pieces on the radio, I still fall to pieces in my car. I fall to pieces. There you go. That was more or less it.
Yeah.
That sounded great.
Yeah, it's fun.
It's nice to play with someone who can sing harmonies effortlessly. That sounded really terrific. So that was my self-indulgent part. Let's self-indulge. Let's indulge you. Why don't you play us something that you're really proud of, or that you just want to play? Like what?
Let's see here. Alright.
And then we will get out of here.
Sounds like a plan.
So you're capoed up four with so what's that put you in it, like a drop F or something? So that's G A B. So what are you in? You're in C with a F bass or something like that.
Yeah. Heated up.
Oh, okay.
Like, oh, this sounds good.
So. Okay, there we go. That works. Nice. Is that called, what's that called?
Sing Out.
Sing Out. Very cool. And how old is that?
About 2-3 years old.
Nice.
Yeah.
So why'd you pick it right now? Any reason?
I like the lyrics of that song, and I kind of felt like it fit with,
nice,
with the night. It had
cool
a baseball theme to it too, so.
When you play solo, do you go up with a set list?
Sometimes I will.
Okay.
But when I have the band, I usually try to have
a
set list together.
It's tough to not have a set list with a band.
Yeah, I'm really lucky though with TJ and Topher, who's Christopher Davis Shannon, like they're awesome. And Chris Miller, who plays drums too.
Okay.
Mostly it's a three piece, and then when Chris can play, like he'll come out to play with us for my project.
Right.
They just follow like whatever I do. Sometimes I'll just forget what I'm doing and they'll still follow. So.
Oh, that's a good band. That's a really good band. that's what you got to look for.
Yeah.
Because I you know, when I play, I'm almost exclusively play solo, and I almost never have a set list. So because I can just feel what I think the crowd wants.
Yeah.
Or what I feel like giving them, whether they want it or not.
Yeah. If I have a longer set, like if I have anything more than like 40 minutes, a lot of times I'll write out a set list so that I like remember what song that I have.
There you go.
In my back pocket.
Don't you hate that? You get off stage like, fuck, I wanted to do the thing and I forgot the song. So how long is your set at the Folk Fest?
It's 20 minutes.
Okay. Sweet. So just four tunes, whatever it is.
And then I'll go to the ladies workshop after that.
I like that. Excellent. Well, Danny, it has been an absolute pleasure. This was thank you for being my first casual interview. So now we're actual friends. Let's say so we're
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, so this was fun. I'm going to this will go up on Monday and everything. I appreciate you being here. Danny Marie has been my guest. She is playing at the Philadelphia Folk Festival. She's playing at Music Fest. You can reach her. I know she's got Facebook. Is DannyMarie.com or where should people get to?
DannyMarieMusic.com.
DannyMarieMusic.com. That's Danny, D-A-N-I, MarieMusic.com. Or, you know, there's a basement apartment in Queen Village. If you hear her strumming in the man cave, if you see a deer head, if you peek down there, she's and when she's not bottle capping at Schatz Brewery. So I will take us out of here with our de facto theme song. I'm going to write a real theme song for this, but until then. Thank you for listening to Rhymes Against Humanity. We will be back next week with another, but it has been my pleasure to chat with Danny Marie Queequeg. How'd you do? Did we have fun, Queequeg? He's been digging his bone. Queequeg is our mascot. Against Humanity with Adam Brodsky and Queequeg, and most importantly, Danny Marie.